I would with my internal mana supply. Maybe that was the key difference between a carnelian and a sunstone. Would I be able to sense my shroud as if it was a part of my own body at that stage? That was an appealing prospect. It would make tricks like this much easier. In the meantime, I needed to find a workaround. The first way I tried to experiment was converting some of my mana from gray into transference, and then trying to push it out of my body, hoping it would mix with the shroud. It didn't. The transference mana just dissipated into the air. I wasn't surprised by the result, but I was a little disappointed. What else could I do? I remembered what Karras had said about his own shroud, which wasn't any gray mana. That was because a shroud was a result of the body leaking out excess mana, meaning that if my excess mana was a different type than gray, theoretically the shroud would be the same. Could I convert so much of my body's mana into transference mana that I was emitting a different type of aura? Testing that was a much riskier prospect. Even though I routinely converted a large amount of mana into transference or mental mana, that was in the process of expelling it from my body immediately into a spell. Keeping an abnormal amount of transference mana housed within my body wasn't necessarily safe. I skimmed my books about the idea. There were lots of spells that involved infusing your body with various types of mana, either to assist with healing or to improve your movement or that sort of thing. I didn't see anything that referred to those spells changing the composition of the caster's shroud, though, presumably because they just weren't changing enough of it to have that effect. Humans had a lot of gray mana, since that was our mana's default state. I speculated that it would probably require converting at least half of my mana to change the composition of my shroud, and most spells weren't designed to use up that much mana, both due to the dangers and the inefficiency. Reading did remind me that summoners ended up generating all sorts of mana inside their bodies from their contracts, though, and they didn't generally suffer any ill effects. That helped me feel a little more comfortable with the idea of tinkering with my mana. I decided it was worth trying, but in a controlled fashion. I converted some of the mana in my right hand into transference and waited. Nothing happened at first. I converted a bit more mana. Then a bit more. I felt a slight pressure beginning to build, but I wasn't sure if it was just in my head until the muscles in my hand began to tremble. I held it just a little longer, watching my shroud, but I couldn't see any change in the composition. The pressure gave way to pain. That was a sign it was time to stop. I released the transference mana from my hand into the air. The resulting shockwave blasted outward and slammed into the nearest wall. I saw the flicker of protective sorcery. The entire interior of Derek's house was warded. Otherwise, I might have put a hole in the wall. I looked down at my hand, staring blankly. I can work with this. The blast was like a much stronger version of what I usually projected out of my gauntlet. Unfortunately, it also took up a vastly greater amount of my mana to use, probably close to half. Ordinary spells were designed to consume just a small fraction of the user's mana, because you had to be able to discharge that amount of mana instantly. But logically, if I could have more time to convert the mana before discharging it, I could throw a lot more mana into a single spell. This wasn't a unique idea. It was how all heart-marked attuned worked. The difference was that heart-marks provided support to the body for that specific style of casting. Without a heart mark, trying to practice this style had a clear downside. My hand was throbbing. I didn't think I'd done any lasting damage, but it was clear my type of attunement wasn't built to be used that way. I'd never cared much for design intent, though. The important part was figuring out what I could do with the tools I had, and how I could make new, better tools. I rested for a few minutes. Then I tried again, releasing the mana before the pressure in my hand grew painful. It had the same effect, a blast of kinetic energy. It was a little bit weaker than the last one, but still far stronger than a blast from my gauntlet. Testing, I could expel enough energy in an instant to push a book around on the floor, but not much more. With several seconds of holding the mana in, though, I could easily push over a chair. At that point, Patrick came by to check on the noise. I got a little embarrassed, told him I was fine, and decided to find a better spot to practice. The roof was the obvious choice, but it was occupied. Karis was giving Marissa another lesson. They offered me a chance to join them, but I wasn't up for that degree of social contact. I went to the enchantment testing grounds instead, where I'd first tested the gauntlet. I requested one with a shield test dummy, which the facility had several of. I spent the next hour or two blasting the test dummy around the tiny testing room. It was surprisingly cathartic. And, more importantly, it taught me a few valuable pieces of information. First, I couldn't generate enough force to push a human back with just an instant of mana conversion. After some testing, I decided I needed to store up my mana for about a second to get enough for that. If I converted the mana in my hand for about 5 seconds, I could generate enough mana to slam the dummy into the wall hard enough to crack the shield. I had to recharge the dummy's shields every time I practiced that, though, so I didn't try it much. Anything in between would have had an intermediate result, and anything longer would result in too much pain for me to use the attacks consecutively. I considered if I could apply it back to my original idea of converting my shroud, but it wasn't currently practical. If I could send out a blast of force, I could generate enough energy to deflect a blade, but saving up that much transference mana took too long. It wasn't practical as a defensive measure. If I practiced enough, though, I'd get better at using transference mana in general, and it would be easier to convert my shroud when I had enough power to make it plausible. I went home feeling exhausted, but satisfied with the results, even if they weren't what I'd been trying to learn. When I got back, I focused the rest of the evening on more transference mana research. I read a little more on the Juggernaut, as well as other attunements that use transference mana, like the Wave Walker and Shield Breaker. There were some types of general spells that anyone with the ability to use a certain type of magic could cast, but as an enchanter, my classes weren't focused on teaching those yet. We were expected to be dedicating ourselves to learning how to make magical items almost exclusively, since that was the primary function of our attunement. Normally, we'd start learning those more general spells next year, but now that I'd been practicing transference mana, I was itching to learn more. I was thinking about spells that involved infusing the body with transference mana when I remembered one of my previous ideas. I wanted to learn to move like Karis did, too quickly for enemies to react. I already knew I could blast myself around with transference mana, like I was doing with the ring, but I wanted to find a way to move faster for a sustained period of time. I found multiple ways of approaching that. Haste spells are designed to increase the target's speed. They require tremendous practice to use, however, because they do not increase their target's mental processing speed, only the speed at which their body moves. Even minor speed increases require a period of acclimation, because if your body moves more quickly than your mind expects, this can throw off your balance. More powerful spells grow progressively more difficult to control. Thus, it is advised that you train with incrementally more powerful haste spells over a long period of time, and do not attempt to use them in a combat environment until you have substantial practice moving at that speed. The highest level of haste spells are generally only possible to use while supported by an attunement that can enhance the user's perception abilities, such as the Spell Singer or Shapeshifter. This means they are often unused, however, as these spells rely on either having two attunements yourself or a second attuned with an emphasis on support magic. There is no known attunement that generates both transference mana and perception mana. It is possible that these mana types simply do not mix naturally with one another. It is sometimes speculated that the type of attunement that generates this pairing was the Chronomancer, a legendary attunement that supposedly originated from the Spider Spire. Because of the difficulty of learning to use haste spells, the opposite type, spells designed to slow enemies, are considerably more popular. These spells do not actually slow the flow of time, but rather constrict enemies with a field of pressure which resists their movements. More powerful slow spells can slow motions to a crawl, or even paralyze them entirely. Both of those categories of magic sounded extremely useful. Also, I immediately wanted a Chronomancer attunement more than I'd ever wanted an individual attunement before. Time magic? That sounded incredible. I read a little more just to try to find more about Chronomancers, but sadly, most books indicated they were nothing more than a myth. Now that I knew necromancers were real, though, chronomancers sounded like they were within the realm of possibility. If they were another restricted attunement, maybe Sheridan would know. Picking up a third attunement was probably a long way off for me either way. Most people never even earned a second. If I wanted to take another judgment in a different spire, I could do that, but judgments grew more difficult the more judgments you'd taken. Since I already had two attunements, but I'd only taken one judgment, I wasn't sure if the tests would consider me to have completed two already. If so, taking another one would probably be impossible for many years. I'd heard of people getting a second attunement at around Sunstone level, but getting a third would probably require at least a Citrine level in both, and that was extremely difficult to achieve. I pushed that to the side and spent the rest of the evening trying to practice a basic haste spell. The first step was very similar to what I'd been doing to try to influence my shroud, just converting some of my gray mana into transference. There were two differences. One, I was using a much smaller amount, only 5 mana worth, rather than the 30 or 40 I'd been blasting outward. Two, I wasn't releasing it outward. I had to learn to take that mana and spread it out throughout my body, then infuse it into my skin, muscles, and bone. That mana would then naturally dissipate over time, since it was being actively used to enhance my body. The process was, surprisingly, not that difficult. I had a mind mark, and that style of mark was specifically tailored toward easily sensing and moving around the mana inside my body. It had never felt like much of a benefit compared to what some of the other marks were capable of, but I didn't have the personal experience to form much of a basis for comparison. Maybe if Sarah had my style of mark, she'd have found it easier to cast spells with something other than her lungs. While I hadn't had a chance to do much with it yet, having an attunement that improved general mana control meant that I was in an ideal position to experiment with other methods of casting spells. That was a potentially huge advantage in the long term. My muscles tingled from the infusion of energy, but aside from that, I didn't really feel any different. Not until I took a step. That single motion catapulted me forward, sending me into a stumble that turned into a tumble. When I hit the floor, my body bounced. When I finally stopped bouncing and rolling, I burst into laughter. That was amazing! The mana itself had been cushioning my impacts. I still felt them, but only barely. I did feel a little nauseated, though, from the rapid movement. I tried it again. And again. And again. I was a little bruised in the aftermath, but I started to get the hang of walking. After about 5 minutes of stumbling around the room and running into things, I understood why these spells weren't more popular. The novelty had mostly worn off, and it was incredibly difficult to move. Still, I kept practicing. By the end of the evening, I could perform basic movements with the weakest quartz-ranked haste spell active. Sadly, I was still clumsier with the spell active than without. I had to deliberately move slowly to avoid hurting myself, and that defeated the entire point of the spell. But progress was progress, and I wasn't giving up easily. I resolved to ask Karras for advice the next day. It was likely he could help me with making the learning process more efficient. I still had a smile when I went to sleep.
Haste spells?
Karras gave me a quizzical look. I don't use them. I stared back at him with a similar expression.
Really?
Yeah.
I know some people who do, but transference mana isn't really my specialty.
I frowned. I've seen you move much more rapidly in short bursts, though. How are you accomplishing that?
Oh, that? Nothing I could really teach, unfortunately.
I'd been afraid of that. Why? Because I don't have access to the dominions that you do?
Precisely. I can infuse my body with energy from that dominion, and that vastly increases both my strength and my speed. It has a high cost, so I use it sparingly.
How do you cope with the loss of balance and coordination?
He shook his head. It's not an issue for me. When I use it, everything around me seems to slow down. I don't feel like I'm moving any faster, just that everything else is moving slower.
Are you a chronomancer?
Karis actually laughed. No, I'm not using time magic. I've seen a lot of strange things over the years, but that's still one that I haven't learned.
What dominion is it that you're using, then?
He shifted his stance, looking uncharacteristically nervous. I'd rather not say.
I shrugged his shoulder.
It didn't really matter, as long as he was right that it wasn't something I could use.
Is there any way I could do something similar, even if it's not the same as yours?
I'm not sure. I've seen people here use similar abilities, like those haste spells you talked about, but I'm no expert on the local magic. Derek would be a better person to ask.
That was a good point. So I bid Karis goodbye and went to ask Derek.
I don't use haste spells either. One of my bound items enhances my movement, but that's with air magic, not transference, so it works differently. Haste spells add additional energy to all of your movements, so you get pushed further every time you take a step or that sort of thing. When I use air magic to increase my speed, it's more like the wind is carrying me in the direction I want to go.
That made sense, and it was good to know there were different types of movement magic available. It also meant that any training exercises that Derek used would be different from training with haste spells, so he couldn't help teach me either. I either needed to focus on practicing more myself or find someone who actually had trained directly with haste spells. Preferably both, eventually. I spent just a little bit more time practicing with haste that morning, but I didn't make much progress. Hopefully, if I spent a bit of time on it every day, I'd both learn to master it eventually and increase my overall proficiency with transference magic. I had breakfast after that, then headed to magic theory class. We had to take a written exam, one of the first I'd taken that school year. Fortunately, I'd always been good with written exams, even if I wasn't particularly good at studying what I was supposed to. I didn't get my results that day, but we apparently would be getting reports on our current grades for each class right before winter vacation, which was getting very close. After that, I had lunch and then mana manipulation class. Professor Edlin was looking unusually serious, maybe a little concerned. She had a large box on her lectern, and she put her hands on top of it as class began.
I'm afraid today is your final exam.
That was not good news. I hadn't been too surprised when Taft had run his final exam early, but I hadn't expected someone like Professor Edlin to do the same. I could see the other students tense and heard a few confused whispers.
Please be quiet, everyone,
the professor began to open the box.
While normally we would wait until the week before winter vacation for the test, we've needed to adjust the class schedule due to an unforeseen incident.
What incident? Was she talking about when Mizuchi went on her rampage? Or maybe that attack on the Grand Cathedral in Delanos?
I wasn't sure how the latter would have impacted the class schedule, but maybe the professor had family nearby that had been injured.
The professor didn't elaborate.
Instead, she simply continued with,
I apologize for the inconvenience. The test will be a simple one. I hope you have all adequately prepared.
She reached into the box and retrieved an object I recognized. A practice shell for making mana crystals.
Your objective is to take one of these shells and to focus your mana inside, creating a basic gray mana crystal. You will have 1 hour to complete this test. I realize this may be too difficult for some of you since we haven't practiced doing this in the class yet. I will do my best to grade leniently because the test is being run earlier than usual.
I had been nervous about nothing. I almost laughed, but I managed to restrain myself.
Please form a line. You may each take 1 case to practice with. If you are capable of filling one in less than the required hour, you can return for another after you're done filling the first one.
I didn't stand up immediately. I ignored the nervous whispers and complaints around me, waiting to get at the very back of the line. When I finally reached Professor Edlin, she handed a case to me. I held it in my right hand, closed my eyes for a few moments, then handed it back to her.
Is something wrong with the case?
She blinked.
Oh, This one is already full. Let me get you another one.
I couldn't help myself from chuckling that time.
It wasn't already full.
What do you mean?
She dug another case out of the box, then handed it to me.
Watch.
I closed my palm around the crystal, focusing my mana. A week ago, it had taken me 10 seconds to form a crystal of this size in one of the practice cases. But I'd been practicing making crystals of a higher degree of density in the open air since then. I'd gotten it down to 4 or 5 seconds.
I handed the filled crystal back to her with a grin.
Are you using some sort of sleight of hand trick?
I grinned.
Nope. I've just been practicing.
Professor Edlin pushed up her glasses, looking down her nose at me.
Practicing.
We were starting to draw some attention from the nearby students now, and I was beginning to regret making a scene, but only just a little. It was fun being ahead of the class for a change. Professor Edlin glanced me up and down, and I noticed her attunement mark was glowing, a subtle sign that she was using it to look at my aura.
A second attunement? Precisely how long have you been hiding that, Master Cadence?
I really hadn't wanted that to come out in public, but in retrospect, it was unavoidable. Plenty of people could see auras, and I had no way of suppressing mine. Maybe I should have looked into something like that as soon as I'd left the spire, but it was far too late now.
I've only had it for a week, Professor. I apologize for failing to mention it.
My teacher sighed, shaking her head.
It's fine. You've passed the test. Congratulations. You can go on home.
Would I get a higher score if I can make a crystal without the case?
Show me.
I did. Professor Edlin congratulated me for it and told me to expect to hear about the results of my test soon. She probably didn't intend for it to sound ominous, but it definitely did. I ignored the glares from some of my classmates as I left the room. I didn't think my early success would hurt anyone else's score. Probably. The rest of the day was easy. I was still in good spirits from both the world's easiest final exam and the haste spell experiments, so I was a little more social than usual. Of course, social for me largely meant that I was willing to involve other people in my experiments. The first was a bit of sparring with Patrick on the rooftop while I tried to use haste magic to dodge his attacks. He used it to practice aiming attack spells more accurately at a moving target, so it was good for both of us. Well, relatively. I was still terrible at moving with a haste spell active, but practicing in a combat environment, and with more space than a tiny bedroom, helped me get used to it a little bit more. We had to stop every couple minutes because I was getting seasick from all the sudden movements, but overall, it was both useful and fun. I think Patrick was happy just to get to spend a bit of time training with just the two of us, too. I had another practice session with Marissa and Karis in the evening. That went about the same as the last one. I did try attacking with the haste spell active as a surprise, but Karis was still faster than me, and he wasn't even using whatever his pseudo-haste spell was. I didn't see the telltale change in his aura that indicated that he was getting serious. I needed a lot more practice before I could catch up to someone like him. That was fine, though. I was making progress, and so were my friends. I had dinner with everyone. After that, I got back to work. If I'd learned anything from the conversation with Jin, it was that I needed to verify important information on my own. Everything he told me about the God Beast attunements fell into that category. I paid researcher a visit.
Greetings, Arbiter. How may I be of service to you today?
She was in a different outfit today. It was still a suit, but it was mostly white, closer to our student uniforms. The change was jarring enough that it derailed my train of thought. What's with the new clothes?
Oh, this? A recent study found that humans in Velia have an easier time empathizing with people who physically resemble them. For example, humans, at least in this nation, appear to be more likely to select mates who have a physical appearance that approximates their own. This study has yet to be fully peer-reviewed, but I am eager to test it on my own. My hope is that by appearing more similar to one of the students, they will be more likely to see me as a reliable information source.
I'll be interested to hear what you find. It sounded to me like she was extrapolating from the study in a different direction from what I might have, but it didn't necessarily mean she was wrong, per se.
It also wasn't what I was there to discuss, though. Researcher seemed happy about my indication of interest, at least.
I would be quite pleased to share. Now, what can I assist you with?
I shook my head, clearing my thoughts. I need some additional information related to Project QSTN and Vera Corrington. Researcher's lips tightened.
I'm afraid the project designation QSTN is still classified information.
I'd prepared for that. It's directly related to the assignment I was working on for Katashi. Researcher seemed to consider that, then nodded with renewed cheer.
Yes, of course. I will be happy to provide you with everything you need.
It didn't take long for Researcher to direct me to the appropriate documents. She wouldn't let me take them home, so I spent a few hours reading at the Divinatory. Everything Jin had said was accurate, including my mother's name being on the list of people who had approved the God-Beast attunements being tested in the Serpent Spire. Alora Theus, it would seem, was assigned to observe the project on behalf of the Valian government. That made her role in the situation much clearer, although I still didn't know how she'd ended up working with Tristan and attacking Vera's group. There was still a great deal more to this picture I wasn't seeing, but for the moment, at least, I had a paper trail to confirm some of Jin's claims. That still didn't mean I agreed with his approach, but it did mean that I could understand it a little bit better.
Mother, how could you allow this?
I bid Researcher a good night and headed back to Derek's Manor. I wanted to research more, but for the moment, I needed to sleep. I had a test coming up, and I needed to be ready.
Wednesday, the day before the second part of the dueling class final exams. I was almost out of time. It was also the only day I didn't have any classes, so I could use it in any way I wanted. I asked my friends if they'd figured out anything, but they hadn't. No one had been looking into it. They'd been too focused on practicing. That left it to me. I started by looking for Teft himself to ask about the test. I didn't want to talk to him about it, but it was low risk with a high potential for reward. For better or worse, I couldn't find him, at his office or otherwise. I asked Derek and Karis, but they didn't know where Teft was either. So I asked Researcher to scry on the tournament area.
That's an unusual request, Arbiter. Can I ask why?
She peered at me with a strange degree of intensity. She never seemed to blink unless she was using it to display a reaction like surprise or confusion. Subtle things like that reminded me that, as human as she looked, she wasn't quite the same. I'm having a test there tomorrow, and I'd like to get information about what I'm up against. There was no point in lying to a creature of knowledge. Not only did I suspect she'd be able to tell just by looking at me, it felt rude.
Oh, why don't you just go over there and ask?
I'm not sure I'm strictly allowed to know the contents of the test in advance. She folded her arms.
Then I'm not sure I'm allowed to help you.
I frowned. I hadn't expected resistance from her. It's for a dueling class. Knowing your battlefield in advance is a critical part of duel preparation. I did look for the teacher to ask directly, but I couldn't find him. All true, even if I hadn't looked very hard. And I could have just asked Researcher to locate Teft. Fortunately, she caved immediately. Nodding vigorously, she proclaimed,
Yes, gathering information is critical to being a successful duelist. Well done!
Thanks. So you'll help?
Sure. Where is it?
The Vaben Arena. Researcher waved her hands, and a flickering image appeared between us. As I stepped closer, I could see that it was an overhead view of the Vaben Arena. She pointed at the image.
What do you need to see?
Wow, that was quick. I'd never seen someone work a scrying spell so effortlessly, but it did make a degree of sense that an elemental could work spells like that easily. I pointed at the spot where we'd had our previous contest. The map shifted, showing a closer view of that spot. I could see several people inside working on the arena floor. Were those other students? I watched for a bit, seeing some students lifting up tiles, others putting them down, and still more drawing on new runes.
Wait, is that Professor Vellum down there with them? Oh, those must be second-year enchanting students.
They must be working to change the arena right before the test. And on the weekend. Yeah, that sounds like one of Vellum's classes. That explained a great deal. I'd suspected they had students working on the tiles, but I'd guessed it would be a massive number of first-year students. Using a single class of second-year enchanters was more efficient. It wouldn't take long for a full class of Carnelians to enchant all the tiles, or even change the existing enchantments on them.
Did you see what you needed to see? I can maintain this a little longer, but it's kind of exhausting.
I shook my head. No, I've seen what I need to see, thank you. Researcher breathed a sigh of relief and released the image.
Great. Was it helpful?
Definitely. I know exactly what I need to do. Professor Vellum's eyes narrowed as I approached.
You're not in this class, boy.
I nodded amiably. You're right, but you know me, always looking to improve myself. I thought I'd volunteer to help out with the enchanting here. You know, get myself some experience. Vellum tilted her head to the side.
You're in Teft's class tomorrow, aren't you?
Yep. Vellum cackled.
Now you're thinking like an enchanter. Just don't be too obvious about it.
I pointed at myself. Me? Obvious? I'll be the soul of discretion.
We both know that you won't. But either this will be a glorious disaster, or you'll manage to wipe the perpetual smirk off your professor's face. I'll be pleased to contribute to either.
And just like that, I participated in Vellum's second-year enchanting exercise as a volunteer. When the matches came the next day, I was more than ready.
Corin, why are you grinning like that? Patrick asked while we waited for class to begin.
You'll see. As expected, Teft led us to the Vaben Arena for our second round of tests.
Assemble the teams you used last time.
Marissa offered me a friendly nudge. I grinned in spite of the awfulness of being touched without warning. Being on Marissa's team would make this a lot easier, especially now that she had another week to recover and train. We started doing some warm-up stretches together. She had a smile on her face as she looked at me.
Glad it's us again, at least. Didn't want to be paired with some stranger.
Agreed. We've practiced this. We can win. I didn't know exactly what the rules of the match were going to be. It would be something truly unfair for me to still have to worry, though.
Today you're going to be matched against your former teammates. You have 5 minutes to prepare before matches begin.
Of course. This was Teft's class. Obviously it was going to be unfair. Marissa and I paused mid-stretch, and there was a brief interlude for expletives. Teft kept talking.
The rules are the same as last time. You will lose when your shield sigil is depleted and no outside weapons are allowed. There have been minor alterations to the arena setup, but you should find the match otherwise similar to before.
We both shifted back to standing positions, sizing each other up. I broke the awkward silence first. I should tell you in advance that I prepared some things just in case I ended up against someone I couldn't beat in a fair fight. Marissa raised an eyebrow.
And?
I waved at her. And obviously you're someone I can't beat in a fair fight.
Wish it, Cadence. I'd think you were trying to flatter me if you had an ounce of flattery in you.
She folded her arms. I just don't want you to think I'm targeting you unfairly or something, Mara. I remember when... Marissa waved her hands dismissively.
Didn't know you then, Corin. I get you now. You're gonna try to win however you can. It ain't personal. I get it.
She offered me a hand. I won't be going easy either. I clasped her hand. You could go a little easy? She laughed.
Wouldn't dream of it.
Patrick and Sarah seemed to be having a similar conversation, but I couldn't hear all of it because Sarah was whispering. Patrick's replies were clear enough.
I won't throw the match, I promise.
After that, Sarah went over to Teft and pulled him to the side to whisper something to him. That was unusual, but I didn't have time to worry about it. If she needed help, she'd ask me. Mara and I spent another minute getting back to our stretches. Then we walked over to the ring. It's the same as yesterday. 6 different active settings on the tiles this time, rather than 5 like before. No middle-of-the-night alterations that I can see. At least no obvious ones. Good. Our 5 minutes were up shortly thereafter. We were the first pair sent into the ring. I felt a wave of trepidation as Mara and I walked down the steps. Taft gave us the sigil monitors to attach to our shield sigils when we reached the bottom. We fastened them on as Taft walked away. We turned our gazes back to each other. There was a shared feeling of anxiousness and trepidation. "Best of luck," I offered.
"Goddess be with you,"
she gave in solemn reply. Equally meaningless platitudes. We would win or lose this on our own. We headed to opposite sides of the arena. This was not what I'd hoped for on a number of levels. First, I had wanted as much time to observe the ring as possible. If there had been another match first, I could have confirmed what I'd seen during the setup of the arena. I tried to console myself with the knowledge that going first was actually to my advantage. If we'd both observed a prior match, Mara would have probably gotten more information out of it than I would have. I already had a pretty good idea of what we'd be dealing with today. Pretty good was just never good enough for me. I disliked uncertainty, and I'd be uncertain until the match started. Second, I probably couldn't beat Mara in a straight fight. Flattery had nothing to do with that. It was an honest assessment. I had two attunements, but neither of them was built for straight combat, and she'd received extra power straight from Kitashi. Her total mana was still greater than mine, if only by a small margin. If I had Selyse Lian, at least I would have had a reach advantage, but we still weren't allowed to use any weapons other than standard dueling canes. Melee combat was probably my best bet against most fighters, but against Marissa, I couldn't count on winning that way. Third and worst of all, even if I won, that meant that Marissa lost a match. I didn't know how badly that would impact our scores. Based on the last match, it seemed like performance was a factor even for the winners, so I hoped that we'd both just be able to make a good fight of it. That meant that my win condition was harder than just winning the match outright. I needed to win, put up a good fight, and make sure Marissa had a chance to show off as well. Unfortunately, that took one of my best tools right out of the equation. No matter. I had others. I was prepared this time.
"Bow to your opponent."
We bowed. Marissa looked nervous but determined.
"Begin."
Marissa rushed forward just as I'd expected. I reached into the bag at my side, watching her. As Marissa hit the red square in front of her, the ground below her erupted with a burst of light. I expected it to badly damage her barrier, as it would have last time. That didn't happen. She was moving so fast that the light barely glanced her, and the portion that hit her didn't deal any noticeable damage. It should have. I activated my attunement, and I took a step back when I saw what she'd done. Normally, a shroud started at the skin and extended a few inches outward. Barriers generated by most magic, including shield sigils, were further out. They were designed to take damage first to protect the wearer from suffering any injuries. Mara had reversed that relationship. Her shroud was massive, stretched out in all directions from her body. That meant anything that wanted to damage her barrier had to get through her shroud first. And she had a lot of shroud to get through. I couldn't hope to match that degree of shroud control. Guardians were specialists after all. Instead, I reached into my bag and pulled out the first device I prepared. Last time, I'd considered disabling my sigil monitor, but that had the risk of activating it by accident. That risk still existed, so I did something a little different. The monitor itself had inspired me. I clipped a second device to my shield sigil. It wouldn't disable the monitor, but now I had a second mana supply feeding into my shield. It would be a lot tougher to break. Marissa hit the next square, then the next, and then a third. Blue, a flash of shield recharging energy. Green, a plume of smoke erupted from the ground, enveloping the square in an instant. Yellow, a wave of frost shot upward, encompassing her legs. It was this match's replacement for the vines, serving the function of slowing someone down. With those tiles active, I knew the pattern. I knew how to proceed. While Marissa ducked down to smash the ice, I pulled out another device. It was a bronze sphere etched with six runes, each one matching a color on the floor. I put my thumb on the red one and concentrated, sending a flare of mana into it. Then I sent another surge of mana into the runes that were carved into the bottoms of my boots. Cautiously, I took a step back. The square behind me, which had been green, turned to purple. Perfect. The dueling cane on my belt began to glow. I stuck the now active sphere back in my bag, drew my dueling cane, and opened fire. Marissa noticed immediately, smashing the charged spheres out of the air without effort. That was fine. I took another step back. Once again, the tile beneath me changed to purple. Marissa must have noticed, but she didn't comment. Instead, she ducked, deflected one of my spheres, and swung her hand down. It was charged with a cutting aura, and she'd been practicing. She sliced the red tile in front of her out of the floor in seconds. Not good. As she lifted it, I fired another blast from my cane, but she just moved the square out of the way. The tile flickered with energy as she leveled it in my direction. She'd used the same tactic last time, and I had expected it, but that didn't mean a blast of light was easy to dodge. If I'd mastered haste, maybe I would have chanced it, but I was far from even managing a beginner level of the spell. Instead, I pulled a hand mirror out of my bag and held it out in front of me like a shield. The blast lashed out, crashing right into me. Part of it hit the mirror, of course, but not much. My barrier cracked, but only a little. Marissa glanced at the mirror, looking worried. I grinned. "Won't beat me with a tactic you've used before," I waved the mirror at her. "I prepared." While I was talking, I shaped my mana, pouring it into recharging the shield sigil as quickly as I could. The backup sigil I'd attached to it was already helping too. Marissa tossed the square aside.
"Guess I'll need to use a few new tricks then."
She stepped onto the empty space where the square had been and took out her own dueling cane. That was unusual, since she rarely used it, and frankly, it wasn't her strength. I put away the mirror, trying not to show my relief. By now, my sphere was almost charged. I fired a few more blasts from my cane, hoping to buy more time. Marissa parried them, as I'd expected, and returned fire. I ignited the blade on my cane and smashed it into her attack, intending to deflect the sphere out of the way like I'd done 100 times before. The blast ripped the dueling cane right out of my hands. I blinked. She fired again, grinning. What was that? I threw myself to the side, avoiding the shot, but I was still stunned. She wasn't on a purple square like I was. Her cane shots should have been weaker than mine. But the amount of force that she'd managed in a single shot had been colossal. If it had hit me directly, it would have cracked my shields badly and probably thrown me back for good measure. Her cane was an ordinary one, the same as mine, no special attachments. But then I remembered. I'd done something similar once before. Against her. She'd stolen my technique. She was overcharging her cane. And she was better at it than I was. I broke into a run, barely avoiding her shots. I rushed to grab my fallen dueling cane, but she blasted it before I got there, knocking it back further. Fortunately, I didn't have to worry about the floor. Every single tile I touched was turning to purple as long as I stood on it, thanks to the runes on my boots. They would revert to the normal color a few seconds after I stepped away, preventing me from leaving a trail of safe tiles. Marissa's shots slowed down. That wasn't a good thing. She was aiming ahead of me now, anticipating my movements. I couldn't keep this up. Eventually, she'd hit me, and I wasn't doing anything to fight back. As I ran, I charged transference mana in my right hand. 1 second. Another sphere burst right in front of me. I turned toward Marissa. 2 seconds. I began to rush toward her rather than away. 3 seconds. Marissa took a step back out of reflex, but leveled her cane for another shot. 4 seconds. I closed a bit of distance, but not enough. 5 seconds. My hand was beginning to tremble. I had enough mana to strike, but I was still out of range. 6 seconds. Marissa fired another blast at me. 7 seconds. I raised my hand, aimed, and fired. The blast of mana ripped out of my hand and hit the sphere dead on. Like deflects like, opposites nullify. Teft had taught us that rule. She'd charged her sphere with enhancement mana, the direct opposite of transference. If they were equally strong, they'd cancel each other out. But she'd only been charging her cane for a second at a time. My blast ripped right through the center of Marissa's sphere and smashed into her, knocking her back a dozen feet. It was weaker after passing through the sphere. The enhancement mana inside had in fact nullified some of my attack, but not much. I saw Marissa momentarily clutching her chest as she steadied herself. Her shield had been cracked, but I couldn't tell how much. My hand was throbbing. I charged it more than 5 seconds, which I knew was my safe limit, but safety wasn't a priority right now. Winning was. Again. 1 second. Energy began to build in my fingers. Marissa rushed toward me as a blur, faster than I'd thought possible. She was triggering squares with nearly every step, but she moved so fast that they didn't have time to take effect. 2 seconds. She'd almost closed the distance between us, and my attack was far from ready. 3 seconds. She ready to swing. I tilted my feet and activated the ring of jumping, blasting myself backward across the floor. 4 seconds. Her swing met open air, but she kept moving, chasing me. 5 seconds. She was nearly atop me again. I swung my hand at her chest and released the blast. She smashed my arm out of the way with her own, sending the attack harmlessly off to the side. That's bad. Her fist slammed into my face. A flare of agony surged through me, and I felt a swell of blood pour down my nose. I coughed, and she hit me again, this time in the ribs. The barriers and shroud were both slowing her strikes, but not stopping them. Neither was very effective against pure kinetic force. I'd been warned about that, but I hadn't solved it. I managed to get my arm up in time to stop the next hit, but the pain from her 2 hits was stopping me from doing much else. Fortunately, I was wearing the Ring of Regeneration, and that was already working to get my body functional again. Unfortunately, it wasn't working as fast as she could punch me. In a moment of instinct, I managed to activate my Ring of Jumping again, pushing myself backward to buy some distance. She pursued, and that moment was enough for me to spit out some of the blood that had trickled into my mouth and raised my hands into a guard stance. When she swung, I sidestepped and punched her back with an instantaneous flare of transference mana. I connected with her shoulder, cracking her shield and making her flinch for just a moment. I took another step back, moving to a sideways dueling stance. I wasn't a guardian, but I certainly wasn't untrained at hand-to-hand. Just that moment of slowing her down meant that she was now standing still long enough for the square below her to kick in. Unfortunately for me, it was blue, a mana-recharging square. I couldn't let her stay there. She seemed to realize the same, and she took a step back to the edge of the square. She adjusted her footing, looking for openings to hit me again. While it was tempting to back off and let my injuries heal, I had arrested her momentum, and any sign of weakness would encourage her to pursue. I couldn't afford that. Her next attack was a probing jab, which I dodged easily, followed by a sweep toward my feet. I hopped over it, landed, and flooded my limbs with transference mana. I'd used a rudimentary haste spell, one I could barely control. I couldn't use it to dodge attacks more effectively like I'd originally planned on. But at this range, that wasn't what I needed it for. My fists lashed out like pistons, slamming into Marissa with twice my normal speed and force. I landed 5 hits before she managed to grab one of my arms, pull me in, and slam an elbow into my chin. As I staggered back, she kicked me in the chest, and I flew back another several feet. I wiped the blood off my face. Marissa cracked her neck. "Your barrier should be broken by now." I stretched my arms, then moved to circle her. "It must be in a good mood." She wasn't wrong. My Phoenix Sigil had been depleted completely, and my normal sigil would have been empty if not for my latest attachment. I pushed a little more mana into recharging my sigil while I was thinking about it, but it wouldn't amount to much. Even with my vastly increased mana control, it still would have taken me a couple minutes of complete concentration to recharge the sigil entirely. I'd lost my haste spell when she'd hit me, but that was fine. I was too dizzy even from the few seconds of using it to do much else with it. In spite of my hits, Marissa was still in better shape than I was. I was dealing some damage, but her shroud had soaked up much of the strength of my blows. I didn't have much time to contemplate a strategy before she charged. "Sorry," I managed, pulling the sphere out of my bag. I'd hoped not to have to resort to using the sphere. It was, after all, completely unfair. But Marissa was right. I was in it to win, and the sphere was fully charged. I threw it at the floor in front of her. She dodged. It didn't matter. I wasn't aiming for her. As soon as the sphere hit the tiles, it emitted a pulse of mana that stretched outward across the arena floor. Every tile the shockwave touched changed to red. And a moment later, they began to fire blasts of mana into the air. I tapped my foot against the tile below me before it could activate, changing it back to purple. Marissa had no such advantage. Instead, she hopped backward, dodging as each tile triggered. In truth, I thought that the gap in timing between blasts would be too small, too insignificant for anyone to dodge. I was wrong. As soon as Marissa jumped backward, she jumped forward, right onto the tile that had just activated. Then, as the tile in front of her glowed and fired again, she moved again. The arena was a blinding array of burning lights, but somehow, Marissa had already found a pattern. I stared at her for a moment, briefly struck with awe. She was closing in on me fast, and I was almost out of tricks. Almost. As she got close enough to swing, I activated the ring of jumping and did something I didn't usually bother with. I jumped. The jump carried me 30 feet up in the air, and I knew from experience that it would also slow my fall. Marissa was below me, readying a swing for when I landed. She'd chosen to stand on my purple square where it was safe. But my square didn't stay purple. Within a moment of my departure, it had changed to red and activated. The ensuing blast hit Marissa from directly below, cracking her shield critically. It was almost enough, but not quite. I began to fall. I charged mana into one of the runes on my right boot and kicked it off as I fell. Marissa swung at me as I descended, but I activated the ring of jumping again, blasting myself backward. The motion cost me. I ran straight into a beam of light, which cut my remaining barrier down to almost nothing. Fortunately, I'd accomplished my goal. My empty boot landed on the square where Marissa was standing. The color changed to green, enshrouding the square in smoke. I landed hard, but my one booted foot changed the square below me to purple. I was safe. Marissa was too, but she didn't know it. She hadn't had enough time to observe the functions of the squares because she'd been charging right through them. And so, she did exactly what I would have done with such limited information. She got out of the glowing green square as quickly as possible. To my amazement, she managed to time it perfectly, stepping on to the next tile right after it fired a blast of energy. Given that she'd presumably been blind, I didn't know how she managed it. Unfortunately for her, that blindness meant she'd missed something important. I'd landed right where she'd discarded the square she'd carved out of the floor. The square flickered once as I poured mana into it, recharging the depleted supply, and then fired a blast that hit Marissa in the face. Her shield cracked one last time, then shattered. Marissa vanished. I had won.
I can't believe you threw your boot at me, Marissa laughed.
I didn't throw it at you. I threw it at the square.
That's not much better.
I shook my head. It's definitely better. You don't have runes that I can change. I considered that for a moment. At least not yet. Maybe I could. Marissa folded her arms.
Don't be creepy, Corin.
I'm not. I'm just thinking about how Katashi made your attunement stronger. Maybe rather than just strengthening attunements, it might be possible to give them new abilities. Marissa frowned.
Not sure if it's wise to be tampering with the work of the goddess.
Teft finally made it into the recovery room where we were waiting, interjecting in the conversation as we approached.
Master Cadence is many things, Miss Callahan. Inventive, perhaps. Underhanded, certainly, but wise. That would not be a word I would even consider using in his case.
I turned toward him, wiping my face again with the wet towel the mender had given me. Marissa had probably torn some cartilage in my nose, but the nasal bone was intact, and the damage was already mostly healed by the time the menders looked at it. You're just cranky because I broke your test.
Not at all, Master Cadence.
Teft shook his head.
In fact, I'm quite pleased you decided to reconnoiter before the battle. And preparing specific objects with the test in mind? That's proper enchanting behavior.
I blinked. Did you just compliment me?
I mean, I know it was directly after an insult, but... I'm offering a bit of acknowledgement for the things you did right, Master Cadence. You should be prepared by now to know that it will be accompanied by a list of the many things you did wrong.
Ah, that's more like it. You were starting to scare me.
The most obvious is that in spite of having an item that gave you a mobility advantage, you chose to get into a fist fight with a guardian, and the best fighter in our class, no less. I recognize that you have significant dueling practice, but you are clearly not at Miss Callahan's level in unarmed combat. What should you have done differently?
If I had more time to prepare, I could have made another item for changing squares more selectively. I thought about the idea of making a cane that fired energy designed to activate a specific function on the tiles, but it turned out to be much harder than something that worked on contact. The sphere was the best I could manage.
And if you had a rod with that function, how would you have used it?
Probably would have made the squares in front of Marissa into the ice ones. Slowing her movement would have let me get enough distance to retrieve my cane, or to get to the square she dropped earlier. Taft nodded.
More preparation would have been wise, yes. How could you have handled it better with the resources you had on hand?
I'm honestly not sure. Maybe I could have used the ring to keep my distance more, but once she showed that she could hit just as hard as I could in ranged combat, I don't know. Taft folded his hands.
I don't know is the wisest thing I believe I've heard you say, Master Cadence. Miss Callahan, can you think of any ways he could have improved?
I knew about his ring of jumping before the match, but I didn't know how much force he could charge up in his hands like that. If I had that kind of skill, I would have gone for a ring out. Maybe ran to the edge and then just blasted my opponent at an angle. Or maybe he could have used the ring itself and just launched me out. Dunno.
That was a really good strategy, and one I hadn't seriously considered. I was so focused on exploiting the mechanics of the match that I hadn't even bothered with something so conventional. I needed to improve on that for the future.
Good. Master Cadence, you may have had the most complicated victory that I've seen this year. That is not a compliment, but it does speak to a degree of strategic ability and an improvement over your last performance. While I heard some of the students speculating that you would be penalized for cheating, I do not intend to punish you. I do have to ask, however, if you are going to fight dishonorably, why not do something that guaranteed your victory?
He shook his head.
You had full access to the arena before the match. You could have added a new function to the tiles that depleted the shield of anyone who wasn't wearing your boots, for example.
I shrugged at that. Or I could have just set up a single square that gave me an insurmountable advantage, or that would have turned off my opponent's shields instantly, or I could have changed the voice activation for the arena to respond to my voice as well as yours. I considered all that, and I determined that it would have defeated part of the point of the test. While preparations for a duel are expected, a real duel would not allow me such an obvious and instantaneous route for victory. I was hoping to find a way to make the match easier while remaining fair. Taft pointed a hand toward the arena.
No match in that arena or any other will ever be fair. If your goal is to be fair, you are already sacrificing performance. You won by a hair today, but you will not win every fight in your life while holding back.
He paused.
Next year, I expect for you to show me that you have learned this lesson.
So, I passed then?
You both pass. Master Cadence, you won against a superior opponent through preparation in spite of your mistakes. You receive a grade of B+. Miss Callahan, you lost the match, but your raw fighting ability remains easily the best in the class. Master Cadence, what could she have done better?
I thought about that for a moment. That blade hand technique she used to cut the tiles. She almost definitely could have broken my barrier faster with that rather than just punching me. Marissa winced.
I'd probably have cut you too, though. I can't control it that well yet.
Taft made a gesture of acknowledgement.
A valid concern, given how dangerous that style of technique can be. The solution is to practice your control to the extent that you do not need to have such concerns the next time you have such a match. But that would not have been my advice for this particular match. Instead, I would have advised you to keep your distance rather than charging in.